Good morning. Anybody excited to be here today? Come on now, give the worship team a round of applause. All right, all right. Thank you, thank you. Hey, that video, we're showing you that video not because it's awesome, but because Easter's coming up. Can you believe it? At the end of March, which starts this week, right? March starts at the end of this week. We're going to have our Easter services. Anybody ready for Easter? Like, hey, we love Easter around here. But we're going to have baptism services. So we've had several baptisms already this year, and we've had so many more questions. People are like, hey, I want to get baptized, or I want to hear more information about it. You can fill out the connection card, or you can go to our website, revolutioncc.org, and at the top of it should say baptism. Fill out that form and we will reach out to you. But we hope to have this room filled, and we hope to have several baptisms. We had like 25 or 30 baptisms last Easter, and we hope to have even more than that this year, because Jesus changes everything, and he changes our life. He wants to change the direction of our lives, and baptism is that first start. But today we're on Luke. Everybody say Luke to make sure you're awake. Luke, all right, we're on this series, Luke for Everyone, looking at the life of Jesus, leading us all from his birth to his death and resurrection. But today we're going to continue, and I'm going to start with this phrase: be kind and rewind. How many of you know that? Raise your hand nice and proud. Hold it up there. If you're raising your hand, you are the old person in the room, right? We're considered old in this room, but be kind and rewind. Some of you haven't heard that phrase for a really long time, have you? Be kind and rewind. And as soon as you hear it, it flashes you back to another time, maybe the good old days. And it flashes you back to video stores. You guys remember those, like Blockbuster? Now, a lot of towns had Family Video or some knockoff version of Family Video, Blockbuster. But let's be real, Blockbuster is where it was at. Like, everybody loved Blockbuster, had your little Blockbuster card. And this was the time before streaming, right? Before there was Netflix and Hulu and every other device that wanted your money, there was video stores. And what you would do originally is you would go check out a VHS, right? Remember those? And you would put your VHS into a VCR. Okay, remember that? Like, that was crazy. And if you watch a VCR today, it seems so blurry, but back in the day, like, man, this is living, right? You can almost feel the static off the big screen TV touching you. But those were the days, right? And you'd put your movie in and you would watch it. And somewhere on the videotape or in the video store, you would see a phrase like this: be kind and rewind. And it would be a reminder, hey, don't be a jerk. Someone else is going to check out this video after you. So rewind it before you return it. And some of you, I'm just looking at you, some of you didn't rewind very much, did you? Like, you know? But you had it, and you're like, be kind and rewind. And as soon as you hear that phrase, you think of that, right? And some of you are like, man, what is he talking about? Just stick with me, right? But be kind and rewind. I love the phrase because it brings us back to those glory days. But I often think about this word, rewind, and how rewind is a really good word to describe how many of us think. When I talk to people and meet with people or hear about people's lives and they talk to me, a lot of times, you know what they bring up first? They're bringing up something in the past, right? They're bringing up something behind them. It's like literally hitting the rewind button, and they're talking about the good old days. Have you ever heard somebody say, hey, back in the good old days, like, or back in the day, right? Like, you say back in the day, man, back in the day, I could take you on the court. And that's just a good way of saying, like, hey, I think I could, but I may not be able to, but back in the day, this good old days, or back when things were cheap. Everybody can relate to that. Back when, you know, you could still do something, or back when life was simple, or back when life was easy. Or we think of, man, this mistake that I made, and it's holding me back, or the things that happened to me. You kind of stuck in the past. And so a lot of times we're living in that rearview mirror, just rewinding our lives. And there's good things about the past. We can think about the good memories. But what happens over time is we seem to romanticize things, or kind of make them bigger, exaggerate things, or they kind of just stick with us, and they get us stuck. So it's human nature to rewind. What I want to do today is, what's the opposite of rewind? Man, some of you are smart. What's the opposite of rewind? Fast forward, right? Fast forward. So what we're going to do is going to get a really uncomfortable really fast, and that's what I like to do, right? Uncomfortable, unfast. I want you to think about this. It's something we don't often think about. We often push it to the back of our mind, but it's a reality for every single person in here, right? No one makes it out 100%. It all comes to an end. Everything comes to an end. Seasons come to an end. Do you know it will become a point where it will no longer snow for a little bit of in Indiana, right? It might snow now, but it's going to come to an end. And you know, about 3-4 months from now, we're going to be saying phrases like this: man, it's not the heat that's getting me. it's the humidity, right? Like that's our catchphrase, right? Like that's our catchphrase. You'll be complaining about that and we'll have those problems. Sports seasons come to an end, right? It's like football's over. What are we supposed to watch now? I know we got college basketball, but till March Madness, like are we supposed to rely on NASCAR? Like what's going on here, right? It comes to an end. Relationships can come to an end. Seasons in life, your life, come to an end. But ultimately, the tough reality that we don't ever talk about is our life one day comes to an end. And hopefully that is a long time from now, but at best we get 100 to 110 years. And hopefully it's a good, long, great life. But that's the reality we all face. We all know it. We don't talk about it that much. But even though we know that reality, it might seem sombering to some. You're like, man, I'm really glad I came to church today. We're talking about death. That's awesome, right? But there's also hope. And we believe, yes, life does end. But we don't believe it ends after life. We believe this. All people spend eternity somewhere. And a really easy way to remember that is all people either spend eternity in the presence of God. And that is God's desire. God's desire is that we will spend eternity with him. That's why he sent Jesus to us. But the other reality is that there's another eternity separated without God forever. So we're either with God or separated with God. And what sociologists have actually found out to be true in humans is like we used to think, well, there's a lot of people among us who don't believe in anything after life. What they found is that that number is becoming less and less, that most people believe in something after life now. Well, they don't know what it looks like. We know what it looks like. We know as followers of Jesus, we have an idea of what God has prepared for us and what is going to happen after eternity. But most people have some view of eternity, and they call it this, the religious reflex. Meaning that they believe something happens. And I find that really interesting because there's a book in the Bible called Ecclesiastes. And I'm going to say this, I said it first service. Right now, people are naming their kids all kinds of crazy things, right? Like, it won't be too long until someone walk around this room called Ecclesiastes, right? Hey, there's Ecclesiastes in the room today, right? But Ecclesiastes was a book of wisdom literature. It was like, hey, read this and get smarter and wiser. But Ecclesiastes is kind of this book where it's a little depressing, right, at certain times. But in it, it talks about this idea of eternity. It says he, God, has made everything beautiful in its time, meaning there's a time for everything and everything has an end. But he also set what? He set eternity in the human heart. What does that mean? That means that eternity isn't just this concept, but in us, that we realize deep down, whether we want to talk about it or not, that God has placed eternity in our hearts, knowing that we long for something eternal, long for something that's going to last. And I like to say it this way. God sparks within us the sense that there's something more than this material world. Like, there's a hope that there's got to be something more than this. It's something transcendent, something spiritual, something beyond ourselves, something eternal. And that's like, boom, you're like, man, it's way too early to be talking about this. It's 11:30, like, man, this is a big concept. So what I like to do is I like to make it real simple, and I start to think, like, how can I simplify this? So I use this image, a clock, right? Some of us in the room can still tell time with the clock like this. Some of us can't, right? But that's another debate for another time here. But this is a clock. And we may not see clocks like that, but you know, every single day there's clocks all around us. Right now on my watch, I have a clock. How do you have an Apple Watch on or some type of smartwatch? Yeah, a clock. On your phone, there's a clock. You're going to get into your car, and guess what? You're going to see numbers on your dashboard. It's going to be a clock. Right now, I see 2620, 2619, a ticker counting me down. It's a clock. I don't really follow that, but there's a clicker counting me down, right? So we have watches and clocks and time all around us, and it's ticking and it's ticking and it's ticking and it's ticking. And every once in a while, if we just stopped and think about the reality of clocks being around us, we come to the conclusion that one day our clock will run out, and that there's a time for everything and everything ends. But we know we spend eternity somewhere. And so what that means is if our clock is always ticking and time is always ticking, that all of a sudden our most valuable resource isn't money, it isn't stuff, but it's time. And what we want to do, what most people try to do, is that we try to prolong time. But often there's times when we live like time doesn't move at all. But what we realize is this real conclusion, it's a little heavy, that how we live today matters for tomorrow. Or how we live today impacts and determines our eternity. That how we're living right now, in the moments, even in this mundane time, in the mundane things of life, it actually does matter. That time is valuable. And then I start thinking like of Tim McGraw. Anybody love Tim McGraw in here? I'm a big Tim McGraw fan, love country music. But growing up, he had this song. He was the man of depressing songs. He had Don't Take the Girl, which as a girl dad now, like I can't even listen to that. Like that's sad. And then there's Live Like You Were Dying. And I sang that song with my junior high heart all, like I sang that so hard. I didn't know what I was singing about. But it's about a dude who got a diagnosis that he's sick. And he's like, hey, I don't know if I'm going to die from this. So what did he do? He went and wrote a bull named Blue Man Chew for so many seconds, right? And he loved deeper, and he spoke sweeter, and he gave forgiveness that he'd been denying. And he was the husband that most of the time he wasn't, and he became a friend would like to have. You know, he gave all these things. And so he starts to live with this reality that, hey, my clock is ticking. Something's happening. I can't rewind anymore. So he fasts forward to the finish line. And the song's all about living with the end in mind. And so today, instead of rewinding our life, I want us to do something. I want us to live with the end in mind, because eternity comes one way or another. Either Jesus returns or we step into it. So what's going to happen is Jesus is going to talk about this today. And we're in Luke chapter 12, if you're following along. And Jesus has been going around, and he's popular, very, very popular now. He's been doing miracles after miracle after miracle, and people are following him. And he's becoming like a rock star, a superstar in this world, in this area. Well, the religious people at the time, they don't like it. So religious people are getting upset that Jesus is preaching against them, but also preaching new things. Like he's establishing this new kingdom. And they say, hey, we got to figure this out because he's getting all these followers and he's causing issues. So they kind of try to trick him and they want to get him arrested. Well, meanwhile, Jesus knows for the first time, we kind of get this sense that his ministry is going to come to an end. So he starts making his way to a city called Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem, he will be eventually arrested and he will be killed. He'll be crucified. And we're going to talk about all that coming up. But he gets this sense that, hey, there's a clock on this now. And so what he's trying to do is he's trying to line his disciples up with his ethics, with his kingdom. He's trying to teach them who he is, what he's about, and what's going to happen. And so eventually he tells them, listen, I'm going to be arrested. I'm going to be killed. I'm going to be put in a tomb. I will return. They're like, what does that even mean? They don't know yet. And he's like, and then I will ascend and I'll go back to the Father. But then there's a promise. I'm coming back, right? It's like after MJ retired, after Space Jam, I'm coming back, right? I'm coming back. And so he tells them, you have to live a certain way, or you need to live in a certain way between when I leave to when I return. And so the same words that he told his disciples then are important for you and I. And this is what it says. It says, be dressed for service and keep your lamps burning, as though you are waiting for your master to return from the wedding feast. Then you'll be ready to open the door and let him in the moment he arrives and knocks. The servants who are ready and waiting for his return will be rewarded. And I tell you the truth, he himself will seat them, put on an apron, and serve them as they sit and eat. And he may come in the middle of the night or just before dawn, but whenever, so we don't know when it is, but whenever he comes, he will reward the servants who are ready. And understand this, if a homeowner knew exactly when a burglar was coming, he would not permit his house to be broken into. You also must be ready all the time, for the Son of Man, which is Jesus, will come when least expected. And we read that like, what in the world is going on here? What Jesus is doing is he's telling a parable. Remember, we talked about context last week. Context is important. Jesus is telling a parable, which would be a story. It's a heavenly story with an earthly story with a heavenly point. He's like, remember, imagine there's a master. Imagine he has some servants, right? So we're like, well, we got to figure out who's the master. Well, the master is Jesus, and the servants are us. And he says, listen, there's a master. There's a guy who's got a bunch of people who work for him, and he's going to go to a wedding. And he's going to leave for a long time. And he's going to come back. But he's not going to tell you when he's coming back. And you know when he leaves, but he's not going to tell you when he's going to return. But the promise is that one day he will return. And so what the servants are supposed to do is, while the master is gone, they're supposed to continue to do their job, right? It's like when the boss is gone, you still got to work, right? And so he's like, you got to continue to do the work and be prepared, because the master may come back in any time. So Jesus is saying, I'm the master, we're the servants, I'm gone, but I'm coming back someday. So be ready. And then we can start debating about this. And if you want to use like a theological idea, is this the second coming of Christ, the second coming of Jesus? And we can debate about what this looks like, because for 2,000 years, people have been debating, hey, what is this going to look like? How is this going to happen? I remember growing up and the Left Behind books were in the library. I didn't know what they were about, but they had a cool title and I read it and I'm like, what in the world's going on? Right? That's scary, right? But all these kind of theories and all these, you know, things that people think are going to happen, all these different kind of ideas of what it's going to look like. No one really agrees necessarily on exactly how it's going to look, but here's what we're going to do today. We're not going to get into those, but what we're going to agree on is one simple thing. No matter how it happens, Jesus is coming back. And what the promise is that it will be unexpected, and everyone will notice. Like, you're not going to be able to not notice it. It's not some people will notice it and others won't. Everybody will notice it. His power and glory will be fully seen. So you're going to experience, you're going to see Jesus for the first time in all his glory, in all his power. There will be judgment for the righteous and the unrighteous, and only the Father who knows when that will be. So that's the promise. This is what Jesus is saying. And then when we talk about this, there's really two camps of people that we see. There's the people who obsess with it, right? And if they obsess with it, you've met them and you know them, right? They probably got the notebooks and they got all the theories and they're trying to figure out to the very, very second. 1988, before my birth time, but 1988, there was a book called 88 Reasons Why Jesus Was Coming Back Today or This Year. Growing up, Y2K, anybody remember that? It's like, oh, that's scary, right? Like, what's going to happen to Y2K? All the computers are going to blow up? I don't know, right? And then there's 2012, right? People have been trying to figure out when Jesus is going to come back, when everything's going to end for a long time, and so you obsess over it. And they continually just kind of obsess. And the reality is, yes, it's closer today than it was yesterday, but we know no one's going to be exactly able to figure out exactly the day and the moment. And then there's the other camp. They ignore it. Like, hey, Jesus wins. I'm just going to live how I want, right? Or, hey, it doesn't really fit the picture I want, so I'm not going to think of it. Or it's too freaky, it's too confusing, so I don't think about it at all. Those are usually the two camps that we kind of settle in. Both of them have their issues. But what if we just did this? What if we said, hey, I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I know it's going to happen. I know Jesus said it's going to happen. And I'm going to prepare and live like it happens. And I know at the end of the book, what we call the Bible, Revelation, guess who wins? Jesus wins. And how we think the story ends, this is so important, how we think it ends shapes how we live today. And remember, how we live today matters because something's on the line. What's on the line? Eternity. So all of a sudden we become full circle. And then we find ourselves back at this parable. And Jesus says, this is what I need you to do. Really, really easy. I need you to stay ready and stay lit. Everybody say, stay ready.
Stay ready.
And stay lit.
Stay lit.
All right, we're going to talk about that. So what does that mean? Well, let's go back to a verse. It says, be dressed for service, a.k.a. ready, right? And keep your lamps burning, a.k.a. be lit, right? So be dressed for service and keep your lamps burning. Let's talk about what this means. Jesus says, I am coming back and I have servants. The master is coming back and the servants need to live like they're ready. And so they're living ready. They're living anticipating the master's return. And how they're to do that is two things. One, they're to be dressed. And I had to share this with you. I thought it was funny. You may not think it's funny, but I'm going to talk about it. Be dressed. In the Greek, it's an actual phrase. It's this phrase up here. Gird up your loins, right? Wouldn't that be like, that's the main point. Gird up your loins, right? And I thought Indiana would love this. Like, you guys talk about tenderloins all the time. Like, what's going on here, right? Gird up your loins. Well, what does that mean? Well, it's referring to being dressed, and it refers to the type of clothing that happened during Jesus' time. Most of the men and the women wore very similar clothes. The women would wear something that looks more like a dress, and the men, basically, the easiest way to think about it is a potato sack, right? It was a robe, right? You'd have a belt, you'd have sandals, and it was comfortable, it was freeing, and it kept you somewhat cool in this atmosphere, in this climate. But, you know, it's kind of hard to do physical activity with a robe on, isn't it, right? Or, like, say you had to run. You're like, yeah, I don't want to run. Like, but imagine you had to run. Something was chasing you, okay? Something's chasing you. Imagine you had to do work on the farm, something physical. Imagine someone wanted to fight you, okay? That's some of your language. You don't want to fight. So what you would have to do is, like, man, you can't fight in a dress. You can't fight in a robe. So what you would do is you would take your robe and you would roll it up, hopefully not too high, right? And you would tuck it into your belt. I don't think they had underwear, right? So you tuck it into your belt, right? and then you'll be able to be ready for action, right? You're ready to fight, you're ready to move, you're ready to take some activity. That's what it means to be ready. So you're being ready, you're being prepared. They didn't have Nike. Women, they didn't have Lululemon strap bags, okay? Like, they had to gird up their loins, right? So you're gonna gird up your loins, which is awesome saying, like, go home, tell somebody that, right? And then you're going to keep your lamps burning. Much easier illustration to understand. You had an oil lamp, and it had oil at the bottom. To keep your lamps burning would be make sure you have enough oil, make sure your lamp is burning, or make sure it's ready as soon as the master comes home and knocks. You can turn it on, and you have enough oil. That's the imagery that Jesus is using. And so, we need to live ready and lit. You need to be prepared, right? Some of you are prepared all the time, but you need to be ready and prepared. And then it kind of continues, is like, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does it mean for you and I? What does it mean to live ready? Well, first, it's about actively aligning our lives with his teaching. Our goal is, one, to get you to know who Jesus is. So that's the first thing. Like, if you're going to be a servant, you have to have a master. And it's making Jesus our master, right? That's the first thing that we prepare to be ready. Making him our Savior, making him our Messiah, realizing that he saves us, that he's our way to God. He transforms our life. And then it's living like him. So aligning our thoughts with his thoughts. So it involves our marriage. You know, how we live in our marriage. The Bible and Jesus is really particular how he wants husbands and wives to live in their marriage, right? A God-honoring marriage. How we parent. How we treat people. How we offer forgiveness. How we love the people around us. How we love people who are far from God. It's like aligning our lives with what Jesus wants us to do. It's aligning his teachings with our lives. And so Jesus said, that's what it looks like. It's living right now like I'm in front of you. Living out my commands, living out the way I've called you to live, living out the greatest commandment, loving God and loving people. It involves all that, and we're living like Jesus is coming back, and we're anticipating it. And then it continues. And you do this as though you were waiting for your master to return from the wedding feast. Then you'll be ready to open the door and let him in the moment he arrives and knocks. And the servants who are ready and waiting for his return will be rewarded. I tell you the truth that he himself will seat them, put on an apron, and serve them as they sit and eat. He may come in the middle of the night or just before dawn, but whenever he comes, he will reward the servants who are ready. So now he's talking about a wedding. And we think of a wedding today, like, so how many of you think weddings are long right now? Anybody like, hey, go to weddings, long time. Like, I don't want to be here, especially Catholic weddings, nothing wrong with them, but they last forever, okay, right? They last a long time. And so they last a long time, but weddings back in the day, you know how long they would last? Not hours, days or weeks. They would go on as long as you had food, right? So yeah, you got some goats, let's fry them up, right? Like some goat nuggets. Like, oh, you got some alcohol, let's keep it going. They would party at the wedding as long as they could. Until the vibe was gone, they would go to this wedding. So weddings could last days and weeks. So if your master left for a wedding, you don't know when he's coming back. He can come back tomorrow, he can come back the next day, he can come back a week from now, right? He's gone, and Jesus saying, I'm gone. So you have to live like I'm still here though, like I'm coming back. So the servants have to live like they're coming back. And when they do this, it says this, the servant that does this will be rewarded. There's gonna be a reward that happens. It says the master, it says he will serve him, they will feed him, they'll eat with him, they will celebrate with the servants who are ready. So Jesus is saying, blessed are those who stay ready and lit. Blessed are those who gird up their loins, baby, right? Blessed are those who are ready for my return. And then he goes, understand this. If a homeowner knew exactly when a burglar was coming, he would not permit his house to be broken into. Man, this is Indiana. If you knew someone's gonna break into your house, you're gonna meet them with the Second Amendment, aren't you? Like, hey, here we go, right? Like, it's not happening. It's no good burglar tells you, hey, by the way, I'm coming to rob you today. Right? They don't tell you that. Anyone that doesn't want to get arrested or hurt, right? They come when the time was least expected. And then here it goes. You also must be ready all the time, for the Son of Man will come when least expected. Again, what is Jesus trying to say? He's like, I can't make it any more clear. I'm coming back, but you don't know when. And then for the third week in a row, silence is broken by stupidity, right? And who chimes up? For the third week in a row, Peter says something. Lord, is this just an illustration for us, or is this for everyone? Should I have been taking notes for this? Like, should I have been paying attention? Because I missed like half the story, man. Should I have been paying attention? Or is this for everyone? He's like, no, Peter, you have to be prepared. Like, I'm going to come in the middle of the night when you least expect it. I'm going to come like a burglar in the middle of the night when you least expect it. And whenever I think about that, I think of growing up. Growing up, I lived in a small town, so I would get to, after sports or after school when I didn't have sports, I would come home right away and I'd be watching my siblings. 9 times out of 10 when we came home, there would be, on my dining room table, there would be a note from my mom. You guys know what that note would say? You guys know what I'm talking about, right? Hey, here's all the things you got to do before mama comes home, right? A whole list of things. Usually, they weren't fun things. And so what you would do is I'd read that note and be like, oh, I know what time my mom's going to get home. So I would try to play that time it out just right, right? And so I go home, turn on some PTI, Around the Horn, some ESPN, eat some Doritos, like living the high life, right? Wait for mom to come home. And most of the time, I got everything done before mom came home, right? Because I knew when she was coming home. But every once in a while, right? Because she would only let us call, if you grew up in the 90s, she would only let us call her work so many times. You know, you have your mom's personal work number somehow, right? You'd call and see when she's coming home. But every once in a while, she would come home when we were least expecting it, right? And guess what would happen? You'd be in some trouble. Right? I'm not going to say what would happen, but we'd be in some trouble, okay? And then if my mom came home before chores were done, I already had an excuse prepared. Hey, mom, you told me to be a good student. I'm just doing my homework, baby, right? Like, I never did homework, but I was prepared. But Jesus, like, I'm coming back, and you better be prepared. So, Peter, this isn't just for you. This is for everyone. And then skip down 2 verses, and then it gets real serious. And this is where we're going to spend the rest of the time today. If the master returns and finds that the servant has done a good job, there will be what? A reward, okay? I tell you the truth, the master will put the servant in charge of all he owns. So there's going to be reward. There's going to be something that happens to those who stay faithful. But what if the servant thinks, huh, he's taking a long time. Maybe he's not going to come back. Maybe I have more time. What if he thinks that? And he begins beating other servants and partying and getting drunk and doing whatever he wants to. Then the master, who said he will return unannounced and unexpected. And this next section is meant to shock us here. There's a shock value here. Remember, this isn't a real story. It's a parable. But this is what it says. Unexpected. And he will cut the servant in pieces. That sounds fun, doesn't it? Like, what? Man, that escalated quickly, didn't it, right? And banish him with the unfaithful. Some translations say unbelievers. And now it gets serious. Jesus said there's going to be 2 types of servants. There's going to be a servant who's living out, not perfect, right? The gospel never requires perfection. But there's going to be the servants who are trying to live out my commands, living my life, their life for me as best as possible. And I'm going to return. And yeah, the floors might still be a little dirty. They may be imperfect in certain areas. But the master's going to see how they've worked. And there's going to be a reward for them. Then there's going to be another servant who just kind of did. He's typically the younger brother of the family, right? That's how it was for me growing up. My brother never did chores, right? But he's like, hey, they're going to do whatever they want. And they're going to party. They're going to beat the servants. They're going to get drunk. They're going to live like I never came back. And all of a sudden, their girds aren't loined up, baby, right? They're not ready. Their lights aren't ready. They got no oil. They're not prepared. He's going to come back. Guess what that master's going to do? He's going to cut them to pieces, which is not fun, right? And banish him with the unfaithful. Jesus says there's going to be 2 types of servants. The servants who are faithful who will spend eternity with me. Servants who aren't faithful, who will spend eternity separated from me. And when we read this, especially as those of us who follow Jesus, these words just scare us. And not like in a bad way, but they should raise our eyebrows because notice what it says. Typically when we think of these, we think of people who follow Jesus and don't follow Jesus. But that's not the context. It says 2 types of servants. It's 2 people who know what they ought to be doing. It's 2 people who know the message of Jesus. It's 2 people who follow Jesus. 1 heart is transformed. That transformation has led them to live like they're being prepared. Though it's not perfect, there's mess ups. And then there's the other one who's like, hey, I don't know if he's coming back. Yeah, 1 time I really believed he was coming back. 1 time I really gave my life to him, but I don't know. And that one will be cut into pieces and banished with the unbelievers. And what you see is he's like, there's 1 servant who will struggle in the wait. And do you know that we struggle waiting? Anybody impatient in the room, right? Anybody sitting next to somebody who's impatient? Yeah, right, all hands go up. You know what this button is? It's a door closed button on an elevator. It's the number one used button on an elevator. I'm not making this up, this is true, okay? I don't know how I know this, but it's true, okay? Number one used button on an elevator. Do you know how fast the average door in an elevator in America closes? 3.1 seconds. Long time, isn't it, right? Like, and I know some of you hit this button right away because you're like, I don't want to be around any other people. Like, no, right? But 3.1 seconds, we can't wait. So you get in the elevator, what's the first thing you do? Hey, somebody hit that button, tap it, right? And does the door close right away? No, does it, right? It's slow. Do you know why? Because most of these buttons aren't designed to actually work, just so you know. They're there for the illusion of control. Seriously, you can go look it up. 3.1 seconds. How many of you have AT&T? Yeah, how patient were you this week, right? Yeah, lost all your service. Not very, right? Wi-Fi goes down. Go to a coffee shop with millennials and the Wi-Fi goes down. See how that goes, right? We stink at waiting. Well, the waiting in this parable is really important because the waiting is what separates. And the waiting revealed the servant's heart. The waiting revealed where the servant's heart really was. The waiting revealed if their heart was changed or they just used words. The waiting reveals your heart and my heart. And what we do in the waiting is what matters. What we do and how we live in the middle until we step into eternity, Jesus comes back, will reveal our hearts. And Jesus says, there's two types of servants, right? And so we're going to stop with those verses today. This parable continues to go on. I would encourage you to go home and read it. But I got to stop and ask you this question. A couple years ago, I heard this speech. And I don't know why I'm like this, but I like motivational speeches. Like, I'll watch graduation speeches that are good. I'll watch motivation. I like it. I eat that stuff up. And there was a speech of this man talking. And he says, the smartest man I ever knew was a fourth grade dropout. And it got my attention. And he goes on, this man who has a doctorate and very successful, he's like, the smartest man I ever lived with and knew was a fourth grade dropout talking about his dad. And he tells this amazing story, but he says every once in a while, his dad would come to him and say, and ask this question, hey, son, how you living? And there's a lot of implication behind that. Son, how you living? Are you doing the right thing? How are you treating your wife? How are you treating your kids? How's work going? How are you living? So let me ask you the same question. How you living? Are your girds loined up? Are you ready? Are you lit? How you treating people in your life? How do you treat those who vote differently than you, act differently than you? What's your relationship with forgiveness like? Do you have an urgency for the people who are far from God? How much smoke do you smell like? How much are you reaching people? What's your marriage like? What's your relationship with your kids like? How you living? Are you living ready? Are you prepared? Because that's what this parable forces us to ask. Are you living with the end in mind? Are you living fast forward? Are you living in the rearview mirror? Are you living out Tim McGraw's song? I want to show you an illustration. Maybe this always helps me realize this more. This is an illustration I saw years ago. I want you to imagine that this rope right here can just go on and on and on and on. Obviously, it doesn't. I cut it, right? But it goes on and on and on. And this green area right here, this represents eternity. And this little pink area right here, this represents your life, right? 100 years, 110 years, if we're lucky, right? And what we do is we get so focused on this. This matters, right? So let me clarify this. How we live here matters. God wants us to live with passion and enjoyment. He wants us to live out our purpose and live a meaningful life. And what we do here does matter. But why is it so easy to just like at times we just cut this off and this is all we see? And we're like, man, when I get right here, I'm going to be so rich, right? Woo, I'm going to be so rich when I get right here. And then your student loans kick in. You're like, never mind, I'm going to be rich when I get right here. But anyways, all right? Man, this part right here, ooh, this is going to be so good. These 20 years, oh, that's going to be awesome. I'm going to love it. Oh, I can't wait till I have kids, and somehow parents tell me, like, it goes like, hey, man, when those kids move out of the house finally, it's going to be so good, right? But we try to live so much, impact so much in here, because we realize it's limited. We realize it, and that's why we try to get the most of it. But what happens is we lose focus of the end. We lose focus of what's coming next. And the saddest thing I see in my job is people who just live for this. They spend their whole life on this, and they miss this. Because this looks pretty small compared to this, doesn't it? But we live with this in mind. And this matters. And it can be an amazing, my prayer for you is that you have the best 100 years on this earth you could possibly have. But God's promise is, I got so much more for you. And I want to spend it with you. And I want you to experience it with me. So don't sacrifice 100 years of this for eternity with me. And Jesus says, I'm coming back. And don't live like this is all that matters. The great C.S. Lewis says this. He says, if you read history, you will find that the Christians who did most for the present world were just those who thought most of the next. Those who really made an impact throughout history, those who really lived generously, were the ones who had their eyes focused most on what was to come. We live now like this life matters because it does, but we have eyes on eternity at all times. Why? Because all people spend eternity somewhere, with God or with away from God, and everything comes to an end. So Jesus says, be alert. Be aware, I'm coming back and I want you to be ready with all my heart. I want you to be ready. I'm not going to force you to be ready. But I want you to be ready because the servant that is prepared gets rewarded. Because the master's coming back. And you don't know when and you don't know what it's going to look like always. But I'm coming back. So what do we do with this? The easiest thing I can tell you is live today like Jesus is coming tomorrow. We often don't think like that. But the master can come back at any time. And he says, live today like I'm coming back tomorrow. Make the most of your days. Live out his commands. Align your life with his teachings. And make the most out of this you possibly can, but not at stake for this. Let's pray. God, we're so thankful for who you are. And we're so thankful that you want to spend eternity with us. The creator of the universe desires us to be in his presence forever. That should move us to be in awe of you, God. And it's proved through your son, Jesus. Father, you don't require perfection. You don't require us to get it all right. But just to know that we are living life for the master, your son, Jesus, who is a master, who is a servant leader, a humble leader, the master who died for each and every one of us, God. So I thank you for the time we have on earth. And I pray that we live on purpose and on mission for you and for your glory. And God, we cannot wait till that homecoming. But today we're going to make the most of what we have, and we're going to live like you're coming back tomorrow. In your name we pray. Amen.